Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. What an exciting night we have prepared for you this evening. Welcome to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. We're broadcasting to you tonight from our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. Also going out to the AM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online, thepoliticalcesspool.org and Liberty News Radio. Co-hosting with me tonight during the first hour, as he always does, is Keith Olbermann. wait a minute. That's not right. Keith Alexander. There's one difference between Keith Alexander and Keith Olbermann. Keith Alexander still has a job. And so he's on the airwaves doing a broadcast one more hour a week than Keith Olbermann is these days. And anyway, there's a few more differences. But Keith, welcome back.
Great to be here.
Good to have you. And as always, Keith, as you know, it's been a busy week. It's been a fun week. Still kind of basking in the glow of the big CNN article. You know, when it came out originally a little over a week ago, I figured we would talk about it some on the program last Saturday. And of course, we did. But I didn't expect that it would continue to be making the sort of waves that it is. A full week and a half later, as we posted onto our website at thepoliticalcesspool.org, 47,558, as of yesterday afternoon, that is how many people, nearly 50,000 of them, who have recommended to their Facebook friends last week's CNN article that featured my commentary regarding the racial oppression that whites face in today's political climate. And I think it's safe to say that now, hundreds of thousands of people literally have had the opportunity to consider my remarks and take them to heart and perhaps even adopt them as their own. How many people may be led to join the ranks of the paleoconservative cause as a result of what they were exposed to by CNN? And CNN, once again, working in cooperation with the political cesspool to offer a different and perhaps dissenting point of view. And we're, of course, benefiting from that. But the question I asked was, how many of these people who were privy to this article are now perhaps considering a different line of thought? Well, that's the question, Keith, that has so many cranks on the left shuddering. As I said in the blog, Kleenex must be making a killing this week. And we saw it, had a little video there for people to enjoy. Check it out tonight. And we're going to be talking more about this in the second hour with Richard Spencer. But just kind of get things kicked off tonight with a recap of what's been going on behind the scenes. I'll let you take it from there.
Well, James said that he is basking in the afterglow. He ought to be smoking a cigarette in bed after the screwing he got from this, what's the guy's name, Pac-Man or something? Jack Pac-Man? Is that the...
He's new to me.
I don't know who he is, but he's apparently on CNN, and he's a left-wing commentator. And, you know, quite frankly, his presence on a major network like CNN...
CNN. He just has a CNN icon there.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that because this guy is as marginal as they come. He's a homosexual. His broadcast partner is a homosexual. They are hard leftists. I mean, they're about as far to the left as you can get without falling off the cliff. And they're attacking CNN for having the audacity to put somebody like Peter Bremelow or James Edwards on to discuss whether whites are a racially oppressed minority. Of course, they don't want anybody speaking that knows what they're talking about, James. That's what it really comes down to. And you and Peter definitely know what you're talking about. You're experts in the field. And, of course, they don't want experts. They want them to interview somebody who's more interested in who won American Idol last and on the oppression of white people and the status of white people in American society and culture today.
Well, Keith, that's exactly right, and with me, they get everything but that. And like I said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be revisiting this a little bit more during tonight's second hour when Richard Spencer joins us. Richard Spencer is, of course, a man of of many talents. He's the former assistant editor at the American Conservative magazine. He's the executive editor of Talkie Mag, also the founding editor of Alternative Right and the executive director of the National Policy Institute. And, of course, it was with National Policy Institute and NPI-TV that I had an opportunity on Thursday night to be interviewed by Richard. Now the tables will turn, and he will appear on the political cesspool this evening and be interviewed by me. That's one hand washing the other. That's the way we like to do things around here when we can. A little reciprocity never hurt. And we're going to have a good conversation with Richard tonight. Well, we'll be discussing his vision for MPI-TV and, as we just did briefly there, the continued response that's being generated as a result of my recent blockbuster interview with CNN. Well, Keith, I know you've got a lot of things on tap with us tonight. We're going to get to that, of course, right after our first commercial break. Before we get there, I just got to say I don't know if I should say this or not, because I certainly don't want to diminish my standing here with the fans. But every now and then you got to, and we all know I'm a man's man. You know it. I know it. The ladies know it. But every now and then you got to do something for your wife. And last year during the fall, I'm going to make a political point with this, but you just got to bear with me. Last year in the fall, we had some family portraits taken, and we had some baby pictures taken of our daughter. Well, the photographer that we hired to take these pictures actually entered in one of the pictures she took of our little girl into an art contest, and a pretty big one here in Memphis, and it won. And so last night, since we were the parents of a subject that had won an award in this competition, we were invited to an art show. And it was the first and only art show that I've ever been to. Might be the only one I ever go to, but at least I can say I did it once. And it was at Christian Brothers University in the Plow Library. And it was a scene. Yeah, and there was a lot of rich Jewish people there in the library last night, let me tell you. And it was a scene there, though, that would have just made made our detractors' jaw drop. This is obviously, if you go to an art show, a very liberal setting. And as I mentioned, not only were my wife and I the only two people in there under 60, I think we were the only two Gentiles in there. But we got along with everybody. We mingled. We talked. We took some pictures by the picture that had won there, and we're happy to do that. They had free food and drinks and all that. So it was us, obviously a bunch of, elderly Jewish people, and then the guy serving the beverages, a black gentleman in a tuxedo. And I was just kind of marveling that, the only black fella there was the guy serving, a room full of Jewish folks, and then my wife and I. I wonder, is it okay to be, for them to be displayed in that manner at an entirely liberal setting? I wonder what the ADL would have had to say about this picture.
Look, the ADL can't say anything about it because all of their gatherings are the same way. Blacks aren't going to go to art exhibits. In fact, they laugh. They scorn white liberals and their sensibilities and sensitivities. James knows how to handle this. Like, I can see James right now with a black turtleneck and a beret on, fitting right in, infiltrating this left-wing crowd.
Guys, we'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We're just getting saddled up for what's going to take place over the course of the next 3 hours. Well, almost 3 hours. Next 2 hours and 40 minutes or so. Sharing a little story with you to get things started as everyone gets settled in their seats this evening. A little art show we went to last night. Got along with everybody, though, mingled. Everyone got along with us. I guess they just assumed I was as liberal as everyone else in the room. But seeing the one black fella there serving the stuff, I just know that couldn't have gone over well in any other setting but a liberal art show.
Yeah, liberals tend to like their blacks when they're wearing starched white uniforms and serving food and drink, James. I've noticed that. You know, that there's some type of fundamental dissonance there between their announced position and the way they live their lives. Now, James has turned the matter over to me for just a moment here, and let me try to, first of all, as a matter of unfinished business from last week, answer some criticisms that were made saying they didn't know why Keith said that Asians and Jews were sometimes the victims of affirmative action. Well, the reason is, under the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the beneficiaries of affirmative action are a term of art called protected minorities, and they tend to be blacks, Hispanics, American Indians, people like that. They threw women into the mix, and that'd be all women, because they knew that they couldn't find enough qualified blacks, Hispanics, and American Indians to even make a dent in the dominance of white males in the business community, in the academic community, etc. They had to turn the women against the men because the women, unlike blacks, Hispanics, American Indians, are not, you know, do not have a deficiency in intellect or anything else. You know, they're going to be right up there, and they're going to be the most effective cadre of people to displace white males. Now, saying that, we need to also recognize that Asians are only 3% of the American population, and Jews are only 2%. So consequently, even if they are victimized, they are they're not a drop in the bucket when it comes to the vast majority of people that are disadvantaged by affirmative action. Furthermore, Jews are not disadvantaged primarily because they network so well. Jews are certainly more than 2% of the admissions departments of most colleges, universities, and professional schools. So consequently, they seem to have been able to see to it that Jews were not suffering when it came to admissions to these type of schools, and particularly selective ones. Now, Asians, to a lesser extent, but then, you know, like I said, they're only 3% of the population. So consequently, let me clarify that. You know, I'm not saying that they suffer to the extent that white males do or white Gentiles do, but they're, you know, they're not in the protected minority category, but they seem to have found other ways to get themselves shoehorned into these plum positions, not only in the economy, but in academia as well. Okay, James. James is back.
Well, I'm back, but what do you want to talk about? It's your dime, your dance floor. I'm just a clown in the circus here during the first hour, just trying to, ride you. Anyone see True Grit, the new movie with Jeff Bridges? You know, Keith really does a good job of spelling me. I'm kind of in the corner doing a little shadow boxing during the first hour. Then I come out and take it down. You know, I'm the closer here on the team. Keith's the opener, and he's kind of like that horse in True Grit. Jeff Bridges just rides him until he just falls and dies on the ground there when he's trying to save the little girl at the end. And that's what I like to do to Keith here in the first hour. You know, we all got to sacrifice for the team, Keith.
Yeah, I'm like a brown mule that he rides till the legs splay out. let me tell you that we were going to talk about the union unrest and the union labor management controversy that's happening in Wisconsin, and it seems to be extending well beyond Wisconsin. And lo and behold, the local newspaper, Commercial Appeal, today's Saturday edition, Saturday, March the 12th, 2011, has on the business section, Section C, primary article, Leaning on King, with a picture of the sainted Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. taken back during his civil rights heyday with, you know.
He somehow has something to do with what's going on today, somehow.
Absolutely. In fact, he has something to do with everything. And, of course, the labor unions in the public sector are showing their true colors by coming out and trying to link themselves with Martin Luther King. Let me read some of this to you. Washington, labor unions are at the heart of a burning national disagreement over the cost of public employees. They want to frame the debate as a civil rights issue, an effort that may draw more sympathy to public workers being blamed for busting state budgets with generous pensions. As part of the strategy, unions are planning rallies across the country on April the 4th, the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Union officials want the observances in dozens of cities to remind Americans that King was supporting striking sanitation workers in Memphis the night he was shot. By portraying collective bargaining as a human rights issue, union officials hope the rallies can fuel a backlash against Republicans in Wisconsin and other states trying to curb collective bargaining rights for their public employees. This is a fight for workers. This is a fight for the middle class. This is a fight to try to stave off the shift in power and wealth that is starting to become gross, said Harold Schlatberger. Again, name that ethnicity, president of the International Association of Firefighters. The planned rallies on the 43rd anniversary of King's death are part of a coordinated strategy by labor leaders to ride the momentum of pro-union demonstrations and national polls showing most Americans support collective bargaining rights as Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and other GOP leaders in states fight to reduce or strip those benefits. Walker has argued that collective bargaining is a budget issue. On Friday, he signed into law a bill that strips nearly all collective bargaining benefits from most public workers, arguing that most will give local governments flexibility in making budget cuts needed to close the state's $3.6 billion deficit. That's something people forget about, Dr. King said, Liz Shuler, secretary-treasurer of the AFL-CIO, the nation's largest labor federation. We all know about his work in the civil rights movement, but he was also a workers' rights advocate. It's also another signal that labor leaders are trying to broaden the coalition of groups speaking out against efforts to limit collective bargaining rights for public employee unions. Unions are coordinating the rallies with the NAACP, the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, and other civil rights, religious, and progressive groups. Dr. King lost his life struggling to help sanitation workers, public sector employees, achieve their goals for a dignified existence as workers, said Wade Henderson, president of the Leadership Conference. We think that's an extraordinary backdrop in which to frame the debate over what's taking place in the country today. When King traveled to Memphis in 1968, he was leading support to more than 1,100 black sanitation workers who were on strike, seeking better working conditions, higher wages and benefits, and union recognition. Daniel Walkowitz, Lord have mercy, do I have to say anything about that? A labor historian at New York University said the gesture was typical of King's later years, in which the targets of his activism were less often the legal barriers to civil rights for blacks. More often, King was focused in lack
Don't
of employment
away.
And educational
Political
opportunities.
Political cesspool, guys.
America.
We'll be back
right after this, ladies and gentlemen.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. You know, there's always a lot of announcements to sort through during the first hour of each of our weekly broadcasts. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, and I guess it goes without saying after so many weeks now, but join us now in the Council of Conservative Citizens online chat, the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party, sponsored by our partners. The Council of Conservative Citizens interact with yours truly, the hosting staff here at TPC, and other fans from around the country and indeed the world by logging on to the chat room right now. All you got to do, if you're listening on the internet, is open up another page on your web browser and go to cofcc.org, cofcc.org, CFCC.org. Join the chat. It's going on right now, and we're in it, Keith. And Keith, as I turn it back over to you, you were in that last segment reading an article from today's Commercial Appeal, the local fish wrap here in Memphis. Now you're going to recap what you just read and go into a little commentary of your own.
Yeah, let's break down that article on the civil rights aspects of the public sector union controversy that seems to be sweeping America right now. Well, first of all...
Now, does this include the NFL?
No. Well, it ought to, though. We'll get into that, too. See, what they're trying to do is, what the left is trying to do is perfectly predictable because they see Martin Luther King as a big plus. I think this is liable to backfire on them. But then on the other hand, the Republicans could have chosen all sorts of places to cut the budget. And of course, if you're really an astute politician, who doesn't vote that would be affected by budget cuts? Well, the answer is obvious. Foreign policy budget cuts, things like foreign aid, things like foreign wars, things like military alliances like NATO, which basically have allowed Europe to develop the social welfare programs that they have because they've been totally liberated by Americans in America from the cost of providing for their own defense. In fact, they have the nerve to charge Americans exorbitant rents and rates to have military bases on their land protecting them. Now, that's where the cuts should be made, but of course, the fact that they weren't made there is a testament to the power of the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower talked about during the end of his regime, I guess you would say it, or tenure as U.S. president in the 50s. The fact is even, you know, driven home more by the fact that in his State of the Union address, Obama proposed freezing all federal governmental spending except the Orwellian-named Department of Defense. So that power of the military-industrial complex is very real, and the power of the globalists is very real. So Republicans aren't going to touch that, and even a so-called liberal pacifist like Obama is not going to touch that, although if you wanted to please the American people, that would be the first thing that you cut, because nobody's ox would be gored here in America by doing it. What they did was they're trying to cut public sector union benefits. Now, public sector unions are a bad thing, and they're right. Martin Luther King came to Memphis because of the union sanitation workers that were trying to form a union, trying to have a dues checkoff. They had to have a dues checkoff because the people in the union were too irresponsible to pay their union dues if they had to pay them separately. The only way they could ever collect the money for the benefit of the union is if that came out of their checks before they got their checks. And that's, in a sum and substance, what the whole Memphis garbage workers strike was all about back in 1968. Mayor Henry Loeb, one of the rare, truly conservative Jews, who was mayor of Memphis at the time, said, this isn't a race issue, this is a labor management issue. Both he and that liberal icon, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, both said that public sector unions were a bad idea. In fact, public sector unions are a haven for minorities today. Minorities flock to them because they provide three things that a regular private sector job doesn't provide. First of all, they provide Cadillac health insurance. You can ravage your body with everything from fried chicken to sexually transmitted diseases, and everything is paid for with this Cadillac insurance. Secondly, they get a defined benefit. While everybody else is in the private sector is quaking with fear as they open their quarterly 401k statement and wonder how much of their retirement went down the drain, people in the public sector know that World War III can hit and they'll still get the same check every year or every month or every week or however often they get paid. And thirdly, because they're in the public sector, they have civil service protection or something that's very much like it, and as a result, they can't be fired for incompetence, laziness, absenteeism, anything else without, basically an act of Congress. So consequently, This is what is happening throughout the United States. Public sector unions have a predominance in most areas of minority workers. So consequently, you know, for the reasons that Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Henry Loeb said, they really do need to be curbed. But on the other hand, we need to remember that in the 50s and 60s, people in the private sector, if they work for a large national company like Procter & Gamble, Lever Brothers, General Electric, somebody like that, they had health insurance. They also had retirement pensions. These things have been trimmed back in the private sector, but not in the public sector. So consequently, you know, the Republican Party, again, shoots itself in the foot by going after workers, but there is a difference between public sector workers and private sector workers. Most white Gentiles that are in a union tend to be in private sector unions, which, of course, have been dying on the vine now for the past 50 years. The only unions that are thriving now are public sector unions, and they're thriving for exactly the reasons that Henry Loeb pointed to when he opposed the Memphis garbage workers strike. He said they can politicize every issue. Whenever you oppose them, you're a racist. That's exactly what's happened. And see, they're trying to make what this newspaper article in the Commercial Appeal today points to is that they're trying to reinforce that link between the sainted civil rights movement and what the Republican Party is now trying to do regarding balancing the budget by reducing public sector employee unions' power and benefits. Now, that's exactly what the problem was and what the problem is. You're going to have to cut those things back. And, of course, Henry Loeb and Franklin Delano Roosevelt warned about it at the inception. You know, by 68, there were not very many public sector unions. Now public sector unions are linked to the civil rights movement. This is what we've told you time and again on this show, James. The civil rights movement cannot be given a pass. All of these mainstream conservatives that want to venerate Martin Luther King, who is a primary personification of the civil rights movement, and the civil rights movement itself, have let the camel's nose in the tent. They've provided that safe haven and base, and this is exactly what the left is trying to do, as indicated in this newspaper article. They're trying to identify themselves with this movement, the civil rights movement, that most Americans, all liberals, and now, unfortunately, most conservatives like a Sarah Palin or a Michelle Bachmann or the Tea Party people, see as being some good thing. Well, actually, it was the beginning of the liberal takeover of America. It provided the blueprint for every other radical egalitarian movement that has come down the path. Homosexual rights, feminism, environmentalism, criminal rights, no-fault divorce, you know, just one thing after another. Basically, the blueprint for change was established in the civil rights movement. When they can't get change in the legislature or through the executive, as a last resort, they go to the judiciary, which acts like a dictatorship, a critarchy, as Associate Justice Reed said in the Brown decision, and they change things by fiat. This is exactly why we continue to point every year to Brown versus Board of Education as the watershed moment in American history. This is when liberalism started to get the upper hand, and the civil rights movement was its first great victory. And unfortunately, because of people like Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, the Tea Party people, as long as they worship at the shrine of the civil rights movement, they're providing the seed of their own destruction. And that's what's going to happen. If they can make this link between the civil rights movement and the union busting that's going on up in Wisconsin and other places, the union busting is bound to fail. And that's all that the, you know, that's the sum and substance of it, Jay.
We're going to be back. Keith Alexander's got to catch his breath, ladies and gentlemen. Let him get a drink of water. I'm going to bring him back to you right after this.
Better life for me.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We're very fortunate that our flagship station here in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, AM 1380, is so close to the Mississippi River because, like any good horse, had to lead Keith down to the banks and get him a drink. But I tell you, he's not coming up lame. I'm not going to have to put him down. He's here for another segment. And how about his commentary in that last segment, ladies and gentlemen? Let me tell you, when Keith comes to work on Saturday night, well, today he actually brought in a crumpled up piece of newspaper. Normally, he just comes in with nothing, and he wasn't using the newspaper at all in that last segment. Let me tell you, completely extemporaneous. We talk about, to use another horse analogy, having an all-star stable of talent. We truly do here. Bill Rowland, Keith Alexander, Winston Smith, Eddie Miller, they make my job as the host very, very easy. And, Keith, that was an incredible commentary. I think I speak for everyone in the chat room right now. Somebody said he's going to start calling you Uncle Keith because you talk like the wise old uncle that's just trying to put some sense into the minds of his people. Uncle Keith. Back to you.
Yeah, I'm the white Uncle Remus, actually. That's what that would probably be a more appropriate characterization. See, the left is always going to come back to the civil rights movement because that's their most profound and recognizable victory. That's where they started changing America. That's basically where they proved to themselves that they had the wherewithal and the tactics and the strategies necessary to change America against the will of the American people. And they're always involved in that, and they will continue to be involved in it. They don't seem to realize that basically among most white Gentiles in America today, the civil rights movement is not that popular. That's why they get very upset when people like James and Peter Brimlow appear on mainstream news outlets like CNN and start expounding upon their viewpoint and their arguments, because those arguments resonate with a large number of American people, and they don't want people to know that there are other people that think like them. They want people that think like us here at the Political Cesspool and you, our listeners, to think that you're some type of oddball and that you need to stifle it the way that Archie Bunker said back in the All in the Family show back in the early 70s. See, they don't want people to understand that basically, you're not alone. In fact, you're the real majority. You know, Spiro Agnew called it the silent majority. And, of course, the guy putting the words in Spiro Agnew's mouth was none other than Pat Buchanan. Now, this is what's happening in the labor front. The labor front was, quite frankly, the biggest area of vulnerability for the Republican Party. If they're going to lead with anything, leading with that was going to be the most tenuous, and the left realizes it. But, again, the left's got blinders on, too. They seem to think that the civil rights movement is as popular with all Americans as it is with them. And, quite frankly, I think that worm has started to turn, too, James.
Well, that's, one of the things we keep putting out there into the court of public opinion, a different point of view. And I think that when subjected to that, people are going to say, well, you know what? If he can say it, then I can say it too, because that's the way I've really believed all my life. I just thought I was the only one. And see, and that's the trick that is sometimes played on us as we are constantly bombarded by the media in this day and age. There's only one point of view you're getting, whether it's on Fox or CNN or what have you, except when CNN interviews me. You're only getting one point of view, and that is not indicative of what's out there. As I have said so many times, I still think that the majority of white middle-class Americans fundamentally agree with that which they hear on this program each and every Saturday night on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Yeah, it's like what we said last week, James. The left doesn't want to win the debate on issues like, are white Americans a racially oppressed minority? They want to end the debate. They want to smother it in the cradle. And that's what they, when they can't do that, they howl like a bunch of cats in heat out on the back fence.
Yeah, now, and folks, if you want to see what a liberal looks like screaming like a cat in heat, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org during this next commercial break. We got a few minutes in between each hour when we go to the national news. You'll have a couple of minutes there take full advantage of it. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and read my blog entry 47,558, and you'll see exactly what Keith is talking about.
Now we're going to try to move into the last topic that we have for tonight. It may blend over or bleed over into next week. It's no-fault divorce. Now, people see things like the civil rights movement or the homosexual rights movement or radical feminism easily as liberal initiatives and liberal victories in the culture war. What a lot of people don't recognize is that just as important a victory for the left was no-fault divorce. It's part of feminism. It did not exist before the late 60s, and quite frankly, it has done what every other liberal initiative has done. They all have the same endgame strategy, and that is to reduce the white birth rate. That's what no-fault divorce has done. People today find it hard to believe, but before the late 60s and early 70s in most of America, you could only get a divorce when you had fault grounds. In other words, there had to be adultery. There had to be physical violence. There had to be natural impotence was another ground.
Now how long ago was this, when this was the rule?
This was probably 1970 in most of America.
Around the same time when homosexuality was classified as it should be, as a mental illness.
Right. Well, you know, the Humanist Manifesto says that all sexual relations are equal. And basically, so many people have internalized that, particularly people that think they are conservatives, people like Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin. Basically, they just rattle on like good card-carrying members of the Communist Party would have in the 1950s, and they see no inconsistency whatsoever with taking the positions they do on issues like that and calling themselves conservatives. Now, no-fault divorce, when you had to be at fault in order to be divorced, there were quite predictably many fewer divorces. Most people realized that they weren't going to be perfectly happy in their marriage, but nonetheless, they would soldier on, and that served very well the primary purpose of wedding, which is marriage, which was not self-actualization for the two participants, man and woman, but to provide a safe, sheltering environment for children and the raising of children, so that children could be raised with the financial wherewithal to be all they could be, as they used to say on the old U.S. Army recruitment commercials. And as a result, because marriages were stable, people had more children, the children were better cared for, they got more attention from their parents. They had the financial wherewithal to go to college if they could get into college and deserve to be into college. And as a result, America was a much stronger place. White people are kind of like an endangered species. When you mess with their nesting grounds, they don't reproduce at the same rate. And at some point, they just stop altogether. And that seems to be what's been happening to whites, not only in America, but in Europe and every other place. Liberalism has disturbed the nesting grounds, and one of the primary devices, strategies, tactics, if you will, that has caused this disruption is the advent of no-fault divorce, James.
I was telling you, Keith, we've been trying to work this particular segment into the show for a couple of weeks now. It's just been so busy around here. When I was on vacation last month, coming home on the interstates, I saw several billboards actually going both directions, to and from my sojourn. Billboards, you know, divorces starting at $199 or $299, you know, $299. They're advertising it as if you're buying a mattress or something. Get your divorces starting at $299. Call such and such law firm. I mean, you know, that's that's sick.
Well, it's crazy, and as somebody pointed out recently, it's easier to end a marriage today than it is to end a cell phone contract.
Yeah.
And, you know, the consequences on the children and on the adults is devastating. People are led to believe that somehow this is their right and that they have a right to be happy. Well, very few people get happier as they have more and more divorces. What happens is that once you've divorced once, it's easier to divorce again. And this is what leads to instability, financial instability, and childhood poverty in America. And, you know, that plus the illegitimacy problem in America, where blacks, 72% of black babies born today are illegitimate. Whites, in 1950, the black illegitimacy rate was 22%. The white illegitimacy rate was 1.5%. Today, the white illegitimacy rate is around 25%, higher than the black illegitimacy rate was in 1950. And the black illegitimacy rate is 72% and rising. Again, what caused this change? The sexual revolution. What was the sexual revolution? Another big liberal initiative. What is the end game? To reduce white birth rates. That's what it's done. Whites have this arcane notion that somehow they need to be able to provide financially for their children if they're going to bring them into the world. And when they can't, unlike certain minorities, they don't bring them in. They just stop having them.
Keith Alexander, ladies and gentlemen, another hour in the books. We'll be back with you next week, but don't go anywhere. Second and third hour of tonight's broadcast coming back at you right after this. I'm James Edwards, and I'll see you right after the break.
Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the Amen.